Brooklyn's Radio. Loving events in Surrey.
This is Dave Demetis. I'm at the Cobham Heritage Day. Unfortunately, the weather's not on our side today. It's been raining all morning. It's mostly sort of stopped, but it's a little bit windy, overcast, a little bit miserable, the weather. However, I think there's a lot of fun things to do here at the Heritage Day, so let's get on with it and meet some people. I'm with David Tipping, Vice Chairman of the Cobham Heritage Organisation.
Yeah, it's the Cobham Conservation Heritage Trust, set up about 11 years ago. It was in fact reformed. We have 1,100 members now, and this is Heritage Day, the 11th Heritage Day, and the wettest Heritage Day we've ever had.
It is a shame about the weather, but there's still a lot of stalls and there's a lot of people here. You have a lot of loyal followers, clearly.
Yes, we something like 100 stalls, and of course including on the leg of mutton field, as we call it, where we've got the gardening club and the classic cars. Lots of organisations taking part.
And there's an arena on the leg of mutton field as well. What sort of things are going on there?
Birds of prey. We've got a little circus skill man there. Not massive. We believe in trying to keep it very much heritage and not going overboard.
What would you recommend that I have a look at today?
I suppose you could say, well, I'll go in the church because it's dry in there, and they've got lots of things going on in the church, in St Andrew's Church, lots of stalls and telling people what they do as a body within Cobham.
Great. So this has been going 11 years, you said. You raise money for charity or for what?
We make money for the Heritage Trust, and we spend money then on projects. The River Hill project, which is down on the River Mole, that cost us about £50,000, some of our money we used some years ago now. Some of the public footpaths were bringing back to life again, and we're willing to look at any conservation project to spend our money on, so it comes back into Cobham.
Great. And your famous duck race is on tonight?
It is, 4 o'clock. And so if you haven't bought your tickets, now's the time to do it.
Well, I passed the stand and the guy was number left 6, 5, 4. They were going fast.
Right. Well, I hope so. You know, we're aiming for nearly 8,000 anyway.
8,000 ducks? Seriously?
We might not quite reach that, but that's what we aim for.
And then the winner gets?
Winner gets £250.
Wow, not bad.
Oh, yeah, down by the platform on the River Mole, just down the end of the Church Street to the right.
Great. The jazz band I can hear. What is the name of the jazz band? Don't know. Never mind. I'll find out. Thank you very much. The Heritage Jazz Band. Well, they're pretty good. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
I'm with Susan Carpenter at the Chatterbus stall. Good afternoon.
Chatterbus, yes, it's a local charity. It was started by a girl who had the vision of people not being able to get, for instance, to the job centre, or the elderly getting to the shops very easily, especially some of the bigger shops. So that's why it was started, with this vision of one person, and it just spread. And many of us felt, you know, what an important fulfilment this could be to the community. So hence, it's on its way, the Chatterbus. We've done a year and a half now, of looking after folks locally, and it's proving, getting more and more popular, really, as time goes by. It's building up its own sort of clientele as people get to know about it. But although we have various monies given to us by the council and local businesses, nevertheless we cannot, and fares of course, but we can't actually meet all our costs. So we are starting a Friends of the Chatterbus and hope to build up even more help and raise funds to run the bus successfully.
Great. So I can see the bus in front of me here, and it's clearly it's all labelled up and everything, and balloons, and so this is a local charity.
Yes.
A local operation.
Yes.
Just to Cobham.
Yes, it is. This is a local charity to Cobham, but we do help other areas. We go to Oxshott, Downside, we go up to Sainsbury's, which of course is not a community, but people like to get there to the shops. We go over to Weybridge, Brooklands, and we're always open to new ideas as well.
So this is for people who would struggle to get to the shops or get to the community centres or the doctors or whatever themselves.
That's why it started, is the fact of people struggling in particular, actually, to get to Weybridge, to the job centre. I think that was probably what prompted this first thought. And then it went from one thing to the other, strength to strength. You know, people liking to go to Brooklands, having a bite of lunch, shopping at one or two of the big shops. You know, large Tesco's or large Marks and Spencer's, but not able perhaps to get there. And so just as ideas grew, so we do different things.
So it's a great local service. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
I'm with Angela and we're in the Hawk on the Wild Side tent. It says, come and experience falconry. There are some amazing birds staring at me like I might be dinner. I don't know about that.
This one here is Chekhov, and he's a steppe eagle.
He's huge, isn't he?
He's pretty big. He's actually too big for me. I don't pick him up, but my daughter does. She's got longer arms than I have.
And what's this one on your daughter? You are?
My name is Xanthi, and this here is Drusilla, and she is a female Harris hawk.
A Harris hawk. Oh, are they the ones that are used for chasing away pigeons?
They are actually very frequently used for chasing away pigeons. If you see a bird of prey being used, it's probably a Harris hawk. They're very intelligent.
And they're very fast.
Not actually particularly fast. They're actually slower than a pigeon, which is one of the reasons for using them. They find it harder to actually catch a pigeon.
Ah, so it's to frighten the pigeons away. I get it, yes. Now, my beautiful friend who was eyeing me up like dinner, what is he?
He's a steppe eagle.
Steppe eagle.
Yeah, they're from...
That's not one I've heard of. Where's he from?
They're originally from the Mongolian and Russian steppes. And they do an awful lot of scavenging. Despite being called an eagle, they actually do quite a lot of scavenging. This particular one was bred in Kent.
Now I can see a beautiful owl as well further down here. What's he?
This one here is an African spotted eagle owl. He was hand-reared in our house. He sat on our laps. He watched television. He watched an awful lot of Top Gear because we simply tuned into Dave so that there'd be lots of human voices going on all through the day. And he stayed in the house. We just literally passed the parcel with him whenever anybody wanted to get up. We just move him to somebody else's lap. We fed him. And when he got too big to be in the house and started chasing the dogs around, then he went out into an aviary. And my youngest daughter actually spent the whole summer sitting with him in an aviary to keep him company.
Oh, wow. And that's to keep him tame, I assume?
Yes, it was just so because he'd got used to being with people all the time. So she just put in a garden chair in his aviary and she just sat with him reading Harry Potter with an owl flitting around her.
Fantastic. I can see a white owl on the end there, is that?
That's a Bengalese eagle owl. She was actually hatched almost the same time as the African spotted, and they were brought up in the house together. So she also thinks that Jeremy Clarkson is her dad.
You'll have to write and tell him, he might like that.
I'm not sure how he would feel about that, but I'm convinced that they do know the theme tune to Top Gear, and they do know the voices of the people on Top Gear because we just had it on all the time.
Well, Jeremy Clarkson will be back on the screen soon. We don't quite know when, but soon. So you'll have to make sure the owls get a TV in their aviary, won't you?
I think we will. I think they're very much looking forward to it.
Now, what are these two guys there before the owl?
Okay, there we have a male Harris hawk, and that's Frankie, and he's actually the brother to Drusilla, who we spoke about earlier. And the next one along is Bryn the buzzard, and that's the most common bird of prey in the UK. There are 50,000 breeding pairs of buzzards. So one of the reasons we always bring him along to things like this is so that people get the chance to see up close the birds that they normally see at a great distance in the wild, because a lot of people see buzzards, but they only see them when they're a long way away, thermaling and soaring over farmland.
So you're here today to educate people about these beautiful birds?
Yes, partly to share our passion for birds of prey and for falconry.
And they're attracting a lot of attention, especially the little kids. But you have to keep them back, don't you?
Yes, we've got a bit of fencing just to keep all the children at the right sort of distance. And that means that the birds feel safe and secure. They know that nobody's going to suddenly burst in on them. So they feel quite happy. They're extremely happy at the moment because they've all been fed. So they're all happy, they know that they're safe, and everybody can get a good look at them.
They're beautiful birds, it's lovely to see them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm with Adrian O'Loughlin and...
Michelle Rosen.
Great, and you are part of Rotary International. It says on the sign, 1.25 million members. That's a few people.
Yes, all clubs all over the world.
And what do you guys do?
We meet every Wednesday. We help with local charities, local projects and international projects and generally try to help in the community.
That's very good. And do you have a particular role?
In terms of role, it's what opportunities are coming up.
Well, you're raising funds today.
We work across the board, don't we? So today we're raising funds for the Tadley's Children's Trust.
Great. I can see a huge jigsaw in front of me. What's this?
The jigsaw is just an opportunity for us to get people onto our stall to tell them about the Children's Trust and Rotary. But it's a treasure hunt. So for 50p, you get three goes. And if you find the treasure, then you win £5. It's just a little bit of fun.
Now, you also said international projects. I can see on the sign there, Rotarians eliminating malaria in Tanzania. So that it's clearly a huge, very important project.
Hugely important, but probably the most important one that Rotary has been involved in recently is the eradication of polio. That's been going on for 10 years, and Rotary has been, across the world, has been a major contributor to that, and we're almost there.
Almost done. Almost eradicated completely from the world.
Yes, almost eradicated. I just think three countries left would just need to run a few years with no cases before we can say we're free.
That is an incredible achievement, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Amazing.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to meet you today.
You're welcome.
I'm with Heather Fraser, standing under an umbrella in the Friends of the Earth tent now. Tell me, why are Friends of the Earth here today, Heather?
Well, we're here to highlight the problems that bees are suffering. There's currently a ban on certain neonicotinoid pesticides, which has been brought in by the EU, but it's due to be reviewed at the end of the year. And we're getting people to sign cards to send to their MP to say that they want the ban to be upheld and continued.
Continued after we leave the EU, you mean?
And also, yes, we're also worried about what might happen when we leave the EU and whether certain laws like that are going to be dropped.
And bees are essential for our economy because of all the pollination that's necessary.
Yes, there's a lot of fruit and vegetables that they pollinate that we just wouldn't have if they continue to suffer due to pesticides.
Yeah, because unfortunately the bee population has dropped an awful lot over recent years, sadly. You have some cream cakes with bee pictures on them. Somebody's artistic.
Yes, that's one of our members' daughters, Emily. She makes the cupcakes from organic ingredients and they're iced in with bees. And we've also got an organic hamper we're raffling, which has lots of organic fruit and veg from our allotments, together with organic wine and also a jar of allotment honey.
Great. You're also after new members at the moment, I believe?
Yes, if anyone's interested in joining the group, we'd be very pleased to see them. We do have a website, Elmbridge Friends of the Earth, with all our contact details on there.
Great, thank you very much. I'm standing in front of Waitrose and the local choral society are having a lot of fun here on the final number. You can hopefully hear it. New York, New York. You probably can't hear, but the crowd are joining in quite a lot here, having a bit of fun. Right, I'm with Dale Thomas, and this is the mixed choir, I believe, who've been having fun here, and people kicking their legs up and having fun. But you deal with the women's choir?
Yeah, Elmbridge Ladies Choir, and we're going on momentarily, so it's an exciting moment.
Oh, fantastic. And Cliff Van Tonder, I know he used to be on Brooklyn's radio. He's been kicking his legs up and getting everyone excited. So who's going to do the same job for the ladies' choir? Is that you?
I guess that would be me. So you're revving me up for the excitement right now.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, no, we're glad to be part of Heritage Day and here supporting Waitrose and doing our bit with Cobham, because we've rehearsed in Cobham for Well, my choir for 7 years now, and the mixed choir for 11, so.
And you guys were overseas on a tour, weren't you, this year?
We were in Croatia in April, yes. Got to be part of a choral festival there.
Brilliant.
It was very exciting. So we try to go overseas every year and a half or so, and then most of our concerts we stay here local in Surrey, obviously, in Elmbridge usually.
And how often do you practice?
Once a week on Thursday evenings here in Cobham.
So there's a men's choir, a women's choir, and a mixed choir, is that it?
Not a men's choir, no. A mixed and a women's.
Right. Great. Well, thanks very much. You've got to go on stage now.
I do. I better go, but thank you very much for talking to me.
Here's a little excerpt of the women's choir doing their thing. From the front of Waitrose in the Wren. I'm with Second Lieutenant Tracy Spavak in front of the Army Cadet Force store. Do you tell me what you're doing here today?
So we are showing people what we do on a daily basis. So we've got about 8 cadets here and they're engaging with the public as they walk past. And we're telling them about all the activities that we carry on a Wednesday night. We meet once a week and then we go around on weekends doing various activities that include fieldcraft, first aid. And we've got here one of our tents all camouflaged up, and we've also got a weapon over there with sandbags so that people can see the sorts of things that we actually get up to. We've also got a ration pack over there so people can see what we eat when we go away on our weekends. So we're engaging with the public, trying to get some new blood into the detachment.
Great. I can also see, now, either it's a dead body or it's a dummy, one of the two.
We have a dummy, which we have on a stretcher that we're using to show first aid, effectively. And we've also got the first aid. We've got an Annie there, and somebody is actually showing the first aid at the moment. So we've got...
What's an Annie?
So an Annie is a dummy that we use to do CPR, which is what the young lady is doing there. Keeping the blood and the breath into somebody when they perhaps are feeling a bit unwell.
Right. Now, what sort of age is Army Cadets for?
So we start at age 12 to 18. So we take them from year 8 in secondary school up to age 18.
And this is an evening and weekend activity?
Yeah, evening. So we meet one evening a week. And we do about 6 weekends a year, but there's tons of other activity that we do as well. And we also do a 2-week camp. So we go away with them for 2 weeks, do lots of activities as well.
So it's good for the youngsters. They get to meet more people, do more things, learn more skills?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the big things they get out of this is leadership. So we get lots of cadets that actually join and tend to be quite shy. By the time they've gone through, they're very open, confident, etc., etc., yeah. Yeah,
sounds very good. And you in your local branches right here in Cobham?
No, our local. Well, there is a detachment here at 152 in Cobham, but we're actually 153 detachment in Esher.
Cobham.
Esher.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
I'm with Nigel Bennett on the Freemasonry stall. So, first of all, the history of Freemasonry. There's a huge sign here about the timeline. So, when did it all start?
Well, we don't really know when Masonry started specifically. It gradually evolved over hundreds of years, literally. For sort of practical purposes, we regard 1717 as the start of organised Freemasonry.
So it's quite recent, 1717.
Relatively speaking, in the total order of things. And of course, next year will be 2017, and that will be our tercentenary. So there will be quite a few celebrations and events going on in 2017 to mark the occasion.
I don't know much about Freemasonry. I'd always assumed it was basically English, but your signs here, Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, General Douglas MacArthur, Benjamin Franklin, it's obviously been very popular in America.
Basically, the English Freemasonry started the ball rolling along with Scotland and Ireland, but there were many lodges formed in English regiments and on naval ships going around the world. So Freemasonry spread with those around the Commonwealth and the New World, and they took Masonry with them. And that's how it spread very largely. A lot of lodges in India and Australia and places like that, Commonwealth countries.
Makes sense. Now, what would you say Freemasonry does in the modern world?
Basically, we do from a public perception point of view, we raise a lot of money for charity. It's not regularly known, but we are probably the second biggest contributor to charity after the National Lottery. So we raise millions of pounds a year for charity, all sorts of charities, not just Masonic charities, but hospices and even things like cathedrals and all sorts of things.
That's incredible. The second biggest after the National Lottery. I wouldn't have guessed at all.
Well, we don't exactly announce it from the rooftops, but we get on and raise money, and we don't have specific fundraising events very much. It's mainly contributed by the members from their own pockets.
So you have a group here in Cobham chapter, or what would you call it?
Well, we have a Masonic Lodge in Cobham. It's called Covham Lodge, Covham being the Anglo-Saxon name for Cobham. And we've been here since 1921, so in a few years' time we're coming up to our centenary, and we've been in Cobham all that time. We're not particularly well known, I don't think, but one of the reasons why we're here today, and we attend this Heritage Day celebration every year for the last few years, is to publicise our presence in the village. And of course we're one of probably the longest surviving organisation in the village, although many villagers probably wouldn't realise that. So we're trying to bring ourselves to the public view to show that we're not all the secret society as we are perceived to be. We do have a few things that we like to keep to ourselves, but basically we are quite an open society now. We have our head office in London in Great Queen Street. That's the United Grand Lodge of England, and they have big museum, big library, and they have guided tours, and people are very welcome to go around the head office. So it's quite an open thing, really. And we're trying to portray ourselves to all the people that go through this Heritage Day that we are around. And quite a few people have stopped to talk to us, and
indeed we will. And keep on raising money for charity.
Hopefully, yes.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I'm with Roly from the Brooklands Trust, surrounded by a lot of beautiful vintage cars. So what's this one that's just escaping in front of us?
That actually is Singer Roadster 1952.
Right, and how about this beauty here?
This is quite interesting, actually, this one. This actually was on the Peking to Paris race, driven by our chairman of the Trust, and Sir Gerry Asher. And this is Sir Gerry Asher's personal car, and he's brought this here today for us to display happily on the stand.
What is it?
It's a Talbot. Is this a Talbot, David? I have to keep referring to this. Sorry.
It's an Aston Martin.
Sorry, it's an Aston Martin. We've got a Talbot over there and I'm getting all confused today. It's the rain. We're ever so wet. We're ever so wet. Down here, these are all our cars, or they're trust members' cars, because we don't like to remove things from the museum, because then we don't have a museum. So they're normally trust members' cars. They're their own cars and they bring them out to these events.
Great. And how about this beauty, which looked like an American one with the luggage rack on the back? A gangster car.
That's actually very nice. He's a trust member as well, but he was actually doing his own thing under his own team today, because he's actually got some family and friends with him. But he will be appearing on our stand at future shows.
And it's Al Capone's ex-car.
I think you're absolutely right. Looking at it, it's absolutely lovely. Violin cases strapped to the back. It's fine, yes.
With guns in, no doubt. Machine guns, Tommy guns. Oh, yeah. What else have we got? What's down on the far end?
We've got a Series 1 Land Rover down the end, which is now becoming quite rare, and that's a beautiful example of that. We've got a Morgan next to that. We've had quite a lot of really nice cars here because it's so appallingly wet now, but we had 11 cars on the stand, which is quite good, which I think is actually more than anybody else has had here. But it won't be terribly long now in this bad weather before I say goodbye to them all.
They are beautiful cars, and if people want to see more, they can of course go to Brooklands Museum.
Thank you very much. We welcome you. Please come along.
Thanks very much, Ollie. Well, that's all for me, Dave Jemptus, at Cobham Heritage Day. Lots to see and do. We all enjoyed it. Bye for me.
Brooklands Radio. Loving events in Surrey.